touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to Scott Blum Podcast. We are back here on this Monday evening with our not quite instant react to the Houston Cougars' close and incredibly frustrating double OT road loss to the Texas Tech Red Raiders from this past Saturday afternoon in Lubbock. I guess we'll call this a somewhat prompt react episode. Not sure. Still workshopping the specific name of this episode here, but good or bad, and believe it or not, it's not all bad. I think we have no shortage of topics to talk about tonight from Saturday's game, and in the spirit of every episode being someone's first for the second week in a row, I'm going to mention that I am Sam, the co-host of this year's podcast, the guy who has introduced the show for 99% of our almost 400 episodes of existence. Dustin, my friend, my co-host, how are you hanging in there on this Monday evening, bud?
I'm doing well. I appreciate being introduced in pretty much all the episodes up until this point, so I've never had to do it. I'd obviously be happier if I was coming here to talk to you, Sam, about a 2-0 start to the Houston Cougar football season, but alas, such is not the season that we get. But like you said, definitely positives and negatives, plenty to take away from Saturday's game, I think.
Certainly, and we'll mention here at the top, we are proud members of the 1012 Network, Big 12 Podcast, present and future, including your future Big 12 Houston Cougars. If you could really appreciate it, follow them on the socials at TEN12 Network. Get following them, get kind of acclimated to the Big 12 before the season starts. And of course, we are also sponsored by the good folks with the good brand, Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. Everything from the recent Indianapolis Colts collection, you can get an NFL team there, down to the Division II Slippery Rock University Athletics Program. I'm wearing a Slippery Rock Rocky the Rock shirt, but very importantly for you, the likely Cougar fan listening, they have a recently refreshed, fantastic, incredibly comfortable vintage Cougar collection, multiple Sailor Cougars. I saw today, Dustin, our home field branding is so strong. We had multiple friends of the show reach out to us and say, hey, did you see the UH bookstore now has home field? And that's really cool. That's another place y'all can get home field if you're on the University of Houston campus. And I believe the bookstore is open on Saturday because I last year went out there and got some Cougar gear at the bookstore with in real life friend of the show, Bobby, out for the SMU game. So if you see at the Cougar bookstore, pick up some awesome home field apparel, vintage tees there. And you could, of course, we would prefer, personally, as much as we would love you giving patronage to our sponsor in any way, because they do have a fantastic product there, we would appreciate you use the promo code HOLMAN12, HOLMAN12, save 15% on your first order. Don't you need to be a Cougar fan? Just enter that HOLMAN12 at checkout, save 15%, and get some great vintage Cougar apparel in your life at homefieldapparel.com. But I think it's time for me to get to the topic I would imagine all or the vast majority of you are listening for, though. If you're listening just for our thoughts on the week two college football season, we appreciate it. But imagine most of you listening to hear us talk about Houston's trip to Lubbock, another frustrating loss to the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And what's so remarkable about this game to me, something I kind of brought up when we were on with our good friend Robert at the Houston Sports Talk podcast a little earlier tonight, Dustin, is if you only look at the final outcome of this game, I don't think a 3-point double overtime loss would be a shocking one. I mean, in terms of the Vegas line on this one, the Cougars finished around a 3.5-point dog after the game opened, I think essentially as a pick 'em. But, and this is a big important but here, I don't think you'll find any Cougar fan who actually watched this game in full who isn't at least some degree of frustrated by how Saturday's loss came to be, which dovetails nicely into how we've liked to start our recap shows this year, how the game was won, or in this case, unfortunately, how it was lost for your Houston Cougars. And I would say, before we dive into this, frustrating as this outcome was, I think my one big picture positive takeaway, Dustin, is after that first half, I wasn't entirely convinced we weren't going to see a third and fourth quarter where Tech just repeated the first and second, in that I do feel like we would be coming on here with a different tone if this was a 3-4 touchdown loss to the Red Raiders. I think the guys deserve some credit, as much as the game was very frustrating and not always the best played, for not, you know, checking out there, for picking themselves off the mat, having the pride to get back in this game against an opponent they were down by a pretty good amount against a halftime.
Oh, for sure. And it was, you know, frustrating in a lot of ways, you know, part of which is getting that same first half. And you know, after the UTSA game, you kind of had all these, you know, things that you didn't want to repeat the rest of the season and things that you wanted to kind of, you know, work on going forward. And it felt like most of them just cropped right back up in the Texas Tech game. And one of them was an offense that just absolutely couldn't finish a drive to save its life in the first half, as well as, you know, a punt return touchdown by Tank Dell being wiped away in the first half. And certainly you won't hear us complaining about the referees making a bad call on this one, though, because you can't deck the punter, as it turns out. So that is a pretty legitimate reason to wipe a touchdown off the board. But it was, it just, you know, just impacted the play nothing at all. And in both cases, both the penalty that was ridiculous for the call that was made and the penalty that was ridiculous for the foul that occurred were just like, it didn't impact the play at all. Like, it just, the punt return was what it was and, you know, deserved to stand. But that's what happens when you run into the punter like that. So, you know, just seeing so many of the through lines, including the first half, you know, offensive stagnation was certainly, you know, concerning, although I guess, you know, the silver lining is one of the other through lines from the UTSA game was the offense finally starting to kind of find its footing in the second half.
And, you know, that very same possession as the roughing the punter, I won't get too bogged down in this one possession, that same one, you saw the Cougars on third and extremely long, stop Tech once again, but gave the Red Raiders a fresh set of downs thanks to an unsportsmanlike conduct by Cougar defensive back Alex Hogan. And thankfully, that specific drive we're talking about, even though it had that touchdown wiped off the board in just the most frustrating fashion, at least it ended in a Red Raider punt. But it was, I think, all kind of endemic of the lack of discipline and just the frustrating play that popped up throughout this game. And you did see in the first half what I think really worried me was you saw the Cougar defense start to wear down. The Red Raider offense went 60-plus yards in their final three first-half possessions, and they got two touchdowns out of that, and thankfully the Cougars a missed field goal attempt. And, you know, we saw on Texas Tech's last touchdown of the first half, two Cougar defensive backs run into each other. And I'm not going to call out those guys individually because I don't like doing that, but it doesn't look great when two guys who have been playing with each other the better part of 3 years in the secondary have such a fundamental breakdown, miscommunication. You see Tech break a big play like they did, but the Cougars finally did get something breaking their way in the opening possession of the second half. Clayton Toon hit Tank Dell on a 63-yard completion, which may or may not have featured a little bit of uncalled OPI, but a few plays later, Brandon Campbell punches it in, and I texted her, you know, not to bring him up two times in less than 10 minutes, but friend of the show, Bobby, and just said, I can't believe we're only down a touchdown. I can't believe I just watched that first half and we're within 7 points with almost a full half of football to play. And, you know, the offense, I think, frustratingly, never really woke up in that second half. That the team's pretty much traded empty possessions for most of the third quarter. And I would say none more frustrating than the Cougs' last third quarter possession, where an Art Green Jr. interception return set the Cougs up well into Red Raider territory and got that Tech personal foul tacked on the end of it. It was just really seemed like the point where U of H could have changed the game there, really could have taken the momentum from their opponents. And then on third and four, your fifth-year quarterback, Clayton Toon, takes a 15-yard sack, ultimately pushes the Cougs out of field goal range, and Bubba Baxa can't connect from 47 yards. But again, that Cougar defense just stepped up time and time again in the fourth quarter. And that's what makes evaluating the Cougar defense's performance this week so vexing, Dustin, because it's, you know, you think about, and we'll get to it, you think about the last 40 seconds of the second half and just how much that sticks with you, and, you know, at least one fourth down conversion in overtime, but you're not even in this game without the defense just playing their butts off in the second half. The Cougs stopped them on fourth and short at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Donovan Smith fell down short of the line to gain, but three plays later, Clayton Toon airmails the ball while getting pressure, and it's right back to Tech, but the Cougs respond with a 54-yard Jace Rogers pick six to tie the game at 17. Again, at the time, it was one of those, I cannot believe this game's tied at 17. Tech has an 18-play drive. It feels like, oh, they might really just win the game here, miss a field goal. And Dustin, the pass is you here. At 5:30 left in the regulation of this game, I would bet anything the Cougars were going to win. It just really felt like when Tech missed that field goal, I wasn't there, obviously, but it almost felt like the air kind of got sucked out of Jones AT&T Stadium there, and that I just was so convinced at the time UH is going to eat up most of this 5:30, and they're going to do what they didn't do last week and win this game. But didn't happen so much that way.
Yeah, unfortunately, another one of those through lines from the UTSA game to the Texas Tech game was having that second half drive. Where you're just like, oh, you know, this is it. This is where we you know, it's a tie game. We got the ball. We're going to drive. We're going to score. That's going to be the end of the game. But then, of course, U of H, you know, just maybe a little bit overly cautious. You're not trying to punch the ball in, or you get a first down. They did run the, you know, the little pass to Matthew Golden, which unfortunately was dropped. Which, you know, that was. And, you know, the couple of friends I was watching the game with, one of them said, oh, why are you throwing it there? Make them use all the timeouts. I said, well, because they're throwing it there because if, you know, if Matthew Golden catches that pass, it's probably a first down and the game is over instead of giving Texas Tech the ball with, you know, 40 seconds and in a three-point game, which, again, another one of those through lines from week one was that, you know, Houston giving the ball back up three with less than a minute to go and then just not being able to do anything other than the Olay defense, letting the opposing team come right down the field and set themselves up for the tying field goal. So, yeah, just as much as both games felt like for a while, it was like, how is U of H even in this game, the way that they have just blown both of their feet off repeatedly with all these, you know, shots to the foot, but then also having that moment where it's like, oh, they've gotten back. They've you know, they're finally in control, and then just letting one slip away and let two games that they probably should not have let get to overtime
Yeah, you know, like last week, the Cougs took the ball first in overtime, and despite a holding call on first down, you got a nice 19-yard reception on second and long from Tank Dell, got the Cougs back on schedule. Toon finds Matthew Golden on a tunnel screen. Golden made a number of Red Raider defenders miss. It was a really fun preview of, I think, what's going to be a few productive years from that guy. Cougs score first in overtime, but got to be the most frustrating part of this game, in a game full of frustrating parts. You had Tech at fourth down with 20 yards to go to stay alive in this ball game, and this is what just drives me the most nuts, Dustin. You called a timeout there to set up the defense. U of H still surrenders 21 yards from a Donovan Smith completion to Jaron Bradley on 4th and 20. A couple plays later, Tech tied the game. And from that point on, I really feel like the Red Raiders had all the momentum. The Cougs started out their second overtime possession strong enough, got inside the 10, I believe, had to settle for a field goal, though. And as soon as we settled for the field goal, I just was not filled with confidence the Cougars were going to get the stop there. A few plays later, Donovan Smith keeps for a touchdown. Red Raiders earn a hard-fought, very painful, if you're a Cougar fan, 33-30 win in Lubbock. Just very quick aside, quite amusing to me, Dustin, that the team that was a 3.5-point favorite rushed the field. A team that's a 3.5-point favorite who just won their fifth game in a row in this series, this one only being the really close one of those five, decided to rush the field. Just found that very funny, apropos of really nothing else in this game. But nothing else, I kind of darkly laughed as I was about to turn off my TV after that one.
Yeah, dark humor is how I would describe that. It's like, oh, that's, I mean, that is literally just the emptiest, like, chuckle you'll ever get is being bemused that the other team rushes the field after beating you in a given sport. But I guess that's something. I guess if nothing else, it's like, hey, yeah, it's maybe an endorsement of the idea that this is going to be a Big 12 rivalry next year that comes with some pre-established juice in behind the rivalry. So if nothing else, I guess it's a good thing in that sense. If it you know, kind of encourages U of H fans to jointly embrace this as an honest to goodness rivalry heading into the Big 12, then I guess so much the better. But man, I got the thing that just how do we keep not beating Tech? Like I understood that they're not like, I'm not taking them lightly that they're not a good team, but it just it feels like they've kind of got our number at this point. So I'm not sure how else to react other than just, yeah, I guess it's funny that they rush the field, but damn, I wish they would quit beating us in football.
Yeah, you mentioned it being a good future Big 12 rivalry game, and hopefully one that we see U of H win before the two of us die. I mean, I know we saw in 2009, but it is. I don't need to tell you this. It has been a long time since you and I watched U of H beat Texas Tech in football. I'm going to let this be sort of a choose-your-own-adventure thing here, Dustin. Do you want to start with something negative or positive in terms of general thoughts, takeaways from this game?
Let's start with something more negative.
Okay, we got to talk about this Cougar offense. You know, I was willing to come on here a week ago, and I still, I think I defend my position here, because I really do feel like a lot of our issues against UTSA would have been solved by, you know, three or four drops not happening. I feel like we would have a lot different, not saying the offense was perfect the first two and a half or so quarters against UTSA, but I feel like we'd have different takeaways if certain plays got made at certain times in that one. And not the case here. The Cougar offense, you know, I think, not unfairly, the Cougar defense has come under the microscope after this pass game. And believe me, the defense is not without fault, you know, allowing a second opponent in a row to drive down the field with under a minute left in regulation and keep a game alive. But I feel like the vast majority of the consternation or criticism from week one and, I guess, our two-game season thus far, I think has to be focused on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, for the second week in a row, we saw this group come out completely flat, completely ineffective for the first two quarters of the game. Really, the first three quarters of the game, but none more so the first two quarters of the game. And unlike week one against UTSA, you never really saw the offense ever gain any kind of consistent traction after that. You had the one touchdown drive with the long tune to Dell pass, which has some OPI on it, but you didn't ever really see this offense sustain a drive to, you know, get the ball around, you know, their own 25 or 30 and march down the field for a score. You never really saw this offense sustain anything. You saw maybe do a little bit here and there between the 20s or 30s, but really when it came down to crunch time, this offense wasn't able to do a whole lot despite getting set up in some pretty great positions by this defense. This is why I think I'm going to be a little kinder to this defense. I mean, if the Cougar defense doesn't have three picks in this one and a couple of pretty good interception returns, this would have been a butt-kicking dust. This would have been a decisive multi-touchdown kind of win for Tech. And Tech's probably going to be better than the majority of our 2022 regular season opponents on defense, but that's not an elite defense you just face. And to struggle as mightily to do anything as the Cougar, you know, offense did on Saturday, it can't be interpreted as anything other than a bad sign. I think I'll squeeze one positive thought in here, one of the only couple positives I would say I even have for this offense, and that was what Brandon Campbell did when he had the ball. I thought was very encouraging. He ran with an authority I don't know if we've seen from any Cougar back besides him in this little two-game sample size of the season, finishing the day with 16 carries for 80 yards, and for good measure, caught four balls for 54 yards as well. You know, hopefully this little injury thing he's working through doesn't bleed over into the next few weeks too much, because in a game where there weren't a lot of offensive takeaways that were positive, I was actually really encouraged by what we saw from the redshirt freshman. I'm making a positive there, but, you know, a lot more negative than positive. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think Brandon Campbell, and again, we're, I believe, still waiting to see the injury status on Brandon Campbell, right? Because I believe they were talking after the game about him getting x-rays or something after getting dinged up. So, you know, just who, if anyone, is going to be healthy in that running back room going forward is, I think, an open question as far as we know. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more clarity by Wednesday. But, yeah, no, a disappointing offensive performance for sure. Second game in a row to start the season, you know, Clayton Tune under 7 yards in attempt. Second game in a row, you know, the Houston rushing attack right around 3 yards per rush. You know, a little bit, if you take out some of the sacks, the numbers get a little bit better. And like I said, I thought I liked some of what Campbell did in this one. But like I said, yeah, the number of just actual, honest-to-goodness scoring drives was just not enough. They were, you know, much too few and far between in this one. And yeah, it, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it got going a little bit more in the second half compared to what it was in the first half, but still not the kind of well-oiled offensive machine you're hoping for with an offense that's got, you know, a senior quarterback in Clayton Tune and you know, a lot of, you talk about all the wide receiver options and a lot, you know, a lot of experience on the offensive line, you know, and Texas Tech and UTSA might be better than average defenses that U of H will face in 2022, but they're not better than average defenses that Houston will face in 2023, I don't think. And going forward, when Houston's in the Big 12, you know, I think that, you know, Texas Tech defense circa 2022, UTSA defense circa 2022 is going to be probably a below average defense from what Houston is facing on a nightly basis against that kind of strength of schedule. And that's just, in so much as this season should be taken as a, you know, kind of, as we said, in every sport should be kind of a test how ready for the Big 12 is U of H. You know, seeing kind of the way the offense struggled in the first two games here and knowing that you're going to be replacing a veteran quarterback, you know, next year, it's not the most encouraging thing in the world. There's, you know, I like the idea of having Brandon Campbell and Alton McCaskill coming back. I like the idea of some of these young receivers coming back, but watching this offense struggle with a veteran quarterback against, you know, I would say middling defenses to start the season is not the most encouraging thing.
Certainly isn't. And I'm someone who's, I think, firmly of the belief that the issues with the offense through two games have more to do with offensive design, more to do with play calling than the execution of said offense by Clayton Tune. But I don't think Tune did himself many favors on Saturday. I think this was as bad as Clayton Tune's been in a good bit. And I thought a couple plays in general, something I think very highly of Clayton Tune on generally is, and I think a big step he took last year was not putting his offense in a bad situation, you know, making the kind of plays where you're getting out of a bad situation, keeping the ball, not taking a bad loss when you can't take a bad loss, not throwing a bad ball when you can't afford to throw a bad ball. And I know he was being hit as he delivered this pass, but the pass that Tech ended up intercepting, that was a high-risk pass. That was a high-risk pass at a time where U of H really couldn't afford to give Tech the ball back in good position. I think just very much by virtue of your defense playing its butt off, that specific interception that set Tech up at midfield didn't really bite you in the butt in the second half a lot worse. And I mentioned it earlier, but that 15-yard sack that Tune took on third and short deep in Tech territory, that's not acceptable for someone who, if nothing else, has shown over his career a really above-average ability to avoid pressure, to take a 15-yard loss there, to, you know, to put your offense in a significantly worse position like that, to basically prevent you from even getting 3 points on that drive. A fifth-year college quarterback shouldn't be putting his offense in that position. No ifs, ands, or buts. And I don't think I'm being too harsh or too mean. I still think Clayton Tune is a quarterback capable of winning the conference on this team. I think the struggle for me is, and I don't think I'm alone here, is really trying to see what this offense is going for. What is this offense trying to do through two games? I mean, no offense is going to look good if your O-line is struggling in pass protect and run blocking. And while I think the pass protection was better this weekend than week one, that's a pretty low bar to clear. And we're still talking about a unit that got called for three different holds at pretty critical junctions of the game. And I don't know if you feel differently, but I don't feel like any of those holds, much as I wanted a hold called in another situation where it wasn't, I didn't look at any of those three calls and was like, oh, what are you seeing there? No, seemed pretty blatant, seemed like the ref had a good view and that it was a clear hold on the U of H offensive line. I mean, just watching Texas Tech try to pass the ball versus when U of H tried to pass the ball, one offense looked like it had a clear plan for getting their young quarterback, in this case, Tech's Donovan Smith, not Donovan Mitchell, the recently former Utah Jazz guard. Donovan Smith, it really just looked like they were doing a better job giving him in a rhythm, giving him passes that build confidence. And it felt like about any time UH did something other than a screen, which, to be fair, the screen game was actually working pretty well on Saturday, it looked extremely difficult. Every time they tried to pass, it looked like we were trying to throw, you know, a back shoulder fade with a guy right on Tank Dell. It didn't seem like the routes were getting receivers open. It didn't seem like Tune was able to find Dell or any other receiver open with any consistency. And I don't know, man, maybe if your quarterback, as much as Clayton Tune does a lot of things, I think, real well, if he has trouble reading defenses really quickly and is often under pressure because of your O-line maybe not being the most consistent pass blockers, I mean, this staff, of course, has forgotten more football than I'll ever know, but maybe put some quicker developing stuff in the playbook, maybe put some stuff in there to give Clayton Tune, a quarterback who hasn't had the two best games of his career, not entirely by his own fault, give him some more confidence early in the game. I think one stat that really indicates what a challenge the Cougars had getting the passing game going is that outside of Tank Dell, Cougar receivers and tight ends only collectively had 6 receptions for 60 yards, including the overtime periods. By comparison, your running backs had 7 receptions. So if this is going to be another year where the offense really struggles to get guys going, not named Tank Dell in the pass game, then I think your ceiling is going to be a whole lot lower than it needs to be. I think it's going to be lower than AAC championship winning team. Yeah, I don't think that's being too harsh.
Man, I think the most harsh thing you did there was imply that the other team's offensive strategy was better and their quarterback was better set up to succeed when he ended up averaging less than six yards per attempt through 3 picks and took 6 sacks. So when you're looking at the other guy going, man, I wish we were doing what they were doing, that means your offense probably wasn't
the
strongest performance of all time. But I don't know. I don't know that I looked at what Tech was doing with Donovan Smith and was like, "That oh, they're doing a better job." I don't think either.
It wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect.
I think it's not a good fact. No, I think that the fact that it's comparable, how comfortable a fifth-year senior, like you said, going up against a guy who wasn't, you know, was a youngster who wasn't expected to be the starter until you know, until this game, facing his first FBS team this year. I think the fact that that we're talking about those two similarly, I think, is enough of an indictment of you know, the way that the Cougar offense looks. And I don't think that's a one-person problem. I think that that's Clayton Tune plus the receivers plus the, you know, running backs plus the offensive line plus certainly the offensive coaching staff problem. I think that there's a lot of probably finger-pointing that could go around and a lot of people that I'm sure feel compelled to deliver a better product in terms of a Cougar offense for the rest of the year than what we've seen in the first two games. And I guess before we get to the positives, because there are some positives that I do want to talk about here, you know, again, we kind of mentioned it, but I think we just really have to come back and, like, underscore, you know, I'm going to say a lot of good things about this defense. I've been really impressed with this Cougar defense broadly, and I think they've done a lot of good things the first two games. But, you know, what are we doing in the late game scenarios? Just like, how do you just let an opponent 2 weeks in a row with less than a, you know, less than a minute to go? Just like, oh yeah, just like boop, 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 two, three plays, boop, 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 right on the field. You know, and just, and the 4th and 20, just, you know, again, we don't, again, Doug Belk, great coach, unbelievably huge fan of Doug Belk. Think he's going to be a great coach, football coach for a long time, but I just don't understand, you know, how do you have like 5 or 6 guys behind the first down marker when, you know, as the receiver for the other team is grabbing the ball in 4th and 20 and about to cross the first down marker? It's just like, where, you know, that is too far into the prevent defense that you're not, you know, you just, your best strength here is your defensive line. If you don't send at least 4 guys in that scenario to, you know, quicken up the clock that the opposing quarterback is working with, I think you're doing the other team a big favor. And I think it's something that this coaching staff is going to really be thinking about heading into week 3 is, you know, how much standing back versus actually still getting some pressure on the other quarterback is appropriate in late game scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, and also I would say I thought we were going to be in trouble on that final tech possession in regulation when Donovan Smith ran for 27 yards in the opening play. I kind of said to myself out loud, like, how did he have that much real estate from him? Because it's not like Tech did a ton of design running with Donovan Smith, but he had called his own number a few times by that point. I mean, his rushing numbers aren't going to show it because he got sacked 6 times, but he was able to make stuff happen with his feet. That wasn't the first time Smith decided to call his own number, either by design or just him improvising off, you know, a broken play or something like that. And I'll fully admit that I can't back this up with a detailed X's and O's analysis here, and I'll co-sign every awesome thing about Doug Belk that you said, but it really felt like on that final regulation possession, and even in a micro level on that 4th and 20 play in overtime, it felt like the defense was trying to play safe. You were dropping 7-8 guys in coverage. You were kind of, you know, you're setting up like a prevent defense and just do something this defense is not comfortable doing. Every offense, every defense out there, they have tendency. They have some kind of personality. You're not going to ask a Mike Leach air raid team to try to rip between the tackles 9 or 10 times, and I don't think you should ask this specific, you know, this 2022 version of Houston Cougar defense to try to be effective dropping 7 or 8. The next time I want to see us dropping 7 or 8 is if it's like we're up by a touchdown and you're just trying to prevent a score in the last play. You're defending it like, you know, a 2-second Hail Mary when in reality you're basically giving your opponent the necessary yards. I know the guy hit a career-long field goal, but you allowed them to set up right down the middle, and even the most, you know, I guess, brain-scrambled kicker isn't going to, you know, have too much of a hard time if they're Division I hitting what Tech did at the end there. I would say the tackling wasn't anything to write at home about either. It really felt like Tech was getting a lot of extra yardage after contact. As I watched this game, I kept counting the number of times Tech found at least an extra several yards, or where U of H had a guy or two in position to make the stop at the line or get the tackle for loss, and Tech would just find 3, 4, 5 yards, and those 3, 4, 5 extra yards are really significant. I do think at least part of the problem with tackling was the fact that this defense was on the field for 103 plays on Saturday. I think even the very best defenses in the country are going to struggle in that kind of scenario. But I also can't argue the tackling and defensive play generally was super crisp and at the, you know, vintage 2021 levels, even earlier in the game before this defense was tired. I really hope there are going to be some tough conversations right now about how U of H is going to set up in a situation, because I would, you know, I'd hope this team, you know, is able to defend a close lead if they have it again this year. I really am curious, Dustin, how many times in the entire season a team did what we have seen now in two straight weeks to surrender that many yards in well under a minute. It's just, Dan Holgorsen said it best as media availability today. It's not winning football. It's stupid crap. And I still have a lot more optimism about this defense than the offense. I think Tech and UTSA in games played away from home was really a torture test for a defense that is replacing two NFL quarterbacks. And you know, you go out there and you immediately face two teams that I think when it's all said and done will be among the higher passing yards per game teams in the country. But that also doesn't mean there isn't a ton of stuff we've seen in the first 2 weeks that doesn't need to be corrected, especially this late situational defense that's now, you know, cost you one game and very nearly cost you the first one. And you know, you were very, very close from, you know, sitting at 0-2, and you know, could be 2-0 right now. It could be 2-0 if you play. And that's just, it's so vexing, Dustin. They didn't allow a single scoring drive that entire second half until there was less than 40 seconds left in regulation. It's just, I don't want to get too bogged down in the negative here, but, and again, I think the issues are less scary and less structural with this defense, but just really frustrating way, just two games in a row now to end it in regulation.
All right. Let's talk about some positives. It is frankly irresponsible that we've gotten
it is
like 30 minutes into this podcast about the Texas Tech game, and we haven't, I don't think even by once, mentioned by name Derek Parrish, who was essentially unblockable in this game. The defensive front as a whole, I thought, did a good job of getting pressure on Donovan Smith. Kind of like you said, some of the finishing of the tackling could have been better, but just getting a ton of pressure on him, just getting six sacks, holding the Raiders to under 3 yards per carry in the run game. And yeah, Derek Parrish, I think Daniel Holgorsen called it today the best single defensive performance he's ever seen, which might be a little bit much, but he did, I believe, set AAC records with 4.5 sacks and 6.5 tackles for loss in this one. And just, yeah, I mean, lived in the backfield. And for that brief moment where it looked like U of H was going to pull out this game, I just remember having this beautiful thought that, oh, Derek Parrish is going to be just haunting dreams in Lubbock, Texas for a while after this one. But, you know, I guess not. I think it's as much as he was an absolute menace in this one and had just an unbelievable, unbelievable defensive performance. You don't really haunt dreams after games that you lose. So I guess probably the folks in Lubbock will have slept fairly well after this one. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't commend Derek Parrish and this defensive front for just absolutely causing all kinds of havoc for the second straight week.
Certainly. I don't want any negative we have around this game to overlook just one of the most spectacular individual performances you'll ever see in that four-sack performance by Derek Parrish on Saturday against the Red Raiders. We've talked about him being kind of the exemplar of a high-motor guy, and just time and time again, you saw him just outwork whatever unfortunate soul Tech had matched up on him on the O-line. And not every week is going to be a four-sack week, but I think if you want to take something positive away from Saturday, it's that Derek Parrish is going to be a problem for every single opponent that sees him this year. And this Cougar defensive front, more broadly, is still very, very, very good at creating pressure. I mean, we knew the Tech offensive line versus the Cougar defensive line would be a bit of a mismatch, but I thought they did just absolutely fantastic on Saturday. I think if Donovan Smith was a hair less mobile, we might be talking about 8, 9, or 10 sacks right now. And that's, again, what makes this game so frustrating is that I thought until that last possession, this was an excellent, with a capital E, second half from the Cougar defense. As good of a half as we've seen in a long time, and in some good recent history behind this defense, for the second week in a row, outside of mostly unscripted quarterback runs, you saw an opponent really struggle to establish a consistent running game. Taj Brooks did have 80 yards rushing, though, or 81 yards rushing, excuse me, but 19 came on one carry. So Roderick Thompson, Tech's most experienced back, only had 11 net rushing yards. I mean, it's not nothing that this defense has faced, I think, to varying degrees of, you know, good to pretty good offense, and neither's really been able to establish a consistent running game, though won't let this negative outweigh it. I think it is the second week in a row that at times you've let an opposing quarterback who has some degree of mobility get you at critical junctures of the game when they decide to call their own number. But I think we expect this to be a great defensive front in terms of creating pressure and a very good to great defensive front at defending the run. And I think that's borne itself out even in two very frustrating games. I think that's borne itself out in these first two games. I think it's a positive worth taking away from in 2 weeks that have been at times a little bit aggravating, I'm sure, in all of our hearts.
Yeah, and certainly there are some individual plays and some facets that the Cougar defense, didn't have a perfect A-plus game. But, talking about Derek Parrish, the game he had, in the middle quarters in week one when UTSA ran tempo, I thought the Cougs had trouble with that. I thought they looked more ready for when Texas Tech wanted to run tempo this time around. Secondary, we talked about coming up with three interceptions, including the Jace Rogers pick six. And like we said, you can talk about the frustrating defensive backs tackling each other or the not getting off the field on fourth and 20. But all in all, I think you have to say that the Cougar defense played well enough to win this game. And if the Cougars offensively had even like a B minus B game, then the Cougars would have won the game because the defense played that well and just ultimately couldn't make every play that they needed to make against an offense that with an offensive coordinator like Zach Kittley with some of the offensive talent the Tech has. Yeah, it's going to be an offense that's going to score some points this year. And Houston was never going to shut them out. Houston was never going to not let them make some plays that made us feel bad about ourselves in the Cougar defense. But the defense made enough plays. They made enough plays that I thought they deserved to win. And I think it's a shame for all the impressive performances that we did see on this Cougar defensive side, led by, of course, Derek Parrish and the unbelievable night that he had. I think it's a shame that these Cougar defenders didn't come back from Lubbock with a W.
I'm glad you said what you did there because you said it. If we have a B-minus effort from the offense, there's no need to defend there in the last 40 seconds because you're probably winning this one by a couple touchdowns given what your defense gave you in the second half. And really, I think didn't play terribly in the first half. Do think they got worn down a bit at the end there. But also want to do before we go, Dustin, I have no good place to put this, but shout out to Lane Wilkins and his 50.4 yards per punt. And also, wouldn't get done there in the special team. Shout out to Peyton Sawyer for an incredible hands and balance play to down an early second quarter punt right on Tech's 1 yard line. It really set the Cougar offense up in a good position eventually with Tech pinned pretty deep there. Situation that was unfortunately not taken advantage of, but won't get too negative. Wilkins and Peyton Sawyer should get gold stars for some excellent special teams work on Saturday.
All right, Sam, I think that is all the thoughts I have for the U of H Tech. You ready to talk about some other college football from week two?
I sure am. I'm excited to talk about some other people's misery, not ours.
There you go. Let's put Tech in the rearview mirror. Let's talk about, let's do some schadenfreude from around the country. And I guess we'll kind of take it chronologically again. Friday saw UCF falling to Louisville 2014, an extremely underwhelming offensive performance from the Knights. And yeah, only one FBS result, Sam, but I think it already kind of has me scratching my head a bit about the John Rhys Plumlee experiment, a QB down there in Orlando.
Yeah, I watched a decent amount of this one, and it's hard to watch that, and I didn't watch a ton of UCF last year, but I watched a couple of games down the stretch, including their bowl win over Florida, which Mikey Keene, who replaced Dylan Gabriel and started much of their last season, and just watching John Rhys Plumlee, who is a dynamic runner, I think would be a good situational quarterback, but quite honestly, you can't watch that game and having watched UCF late last season and not feel like they've taken a big step down in terms of the passing game, and that was the one unproven thing. It was just like, okay, on paper, this offense is really exciting. They have some dynamic receivers back. They have Isaiah Bowser, a good running back to pair with a guy who's been a really dynamic running quarterback, but you'd never seen John Rhys Plumlee really do it as a passer over his career, but it was just, okay, well, we saw him as a true freshman. You can't really judge what he did too harshly as a true freshman in 2019, but man, just after seeing that Louisville team get smoked in week one by Syracuse to go out there and beat UCF on their home field, you can listen to what I said last week. I was very confident that the Knights had this one. The Knights would get a revenge game from a painful loss last year in Florida. And quite frankly, I think Louisville did the Knights a lot of favors with their own foot shooting. I think this could have been a lot worse if Louisville had played a lot cleaner game, at least on the offensive side of things. Just not a really good effort from UCF, and I'm sure the kind of effort that's prompting a lot of inquests, as the British like to say.
All right, and then getting into Saturday, which saw just a number of just really, really funny fun upsets, most of them happening on Saturday morning. And the almost upset that we got, of course, was UT Austin almost beating number one Alabama. And, guys, the funniest result here would have been the Longhorns losing by like 40. But the second funniest result might be them almost beating the Crimson Tide. Honestly, they probably should have beat the Crimson Tide and still you know, again, obviously you hope that Quinn Ewers is okay. No, negative thoughts towards him there, but just getting the knowing that the UT fans have the flashbacks to the 2010 BCS championship game. It was all a bit entertaining from Longhorn Schadenfreude, but you know, kind of remarkable that they were right in this game. They, you know, if they get probably what should have been a safety called early in the game, maybe the outcome is different. If they don't let Alabama, you know, drive and score in the last 90 seconds when it looked like they were ahead, maybe this thing is different. But all in all, you know, I guess Alabama still wins, and UT Austin continues being this close. And like I said, ultimately, that is pretty funny.
Yeah, very funny to see them almost win and then just lose it at the end there. We'll say, it's just, it does, nothing pains me more, Dustin, than saying that school got a bad call against, and that school that mysteriously gets lots of calls their way. But, oh, man. I don't think there are going to be 5 worst calls this year in college football. That was terrible, man. I would have had a core. If that was Donovan Smith on Saturday, I would still be having a cow about it like 2 days later.
Oh, yeah. We would have spent at least a good 10, 15 minutes of this podcast air talking about that call if that one had gone against U of H, which, again, seeing it happen against the Burnt Orange School, extremely funny.
Very funny.
Another very funny result involving a in-state school from Saturday morning was App State stunning Texas A&M 17-14. Not the only Sun Belt upset of a top 10 ranked team, and yet an extremely funny result. And again, it's just, this result wasn't like some fluke accident. The Aggies only ran 2 plays in App State's half of the field until their final drive of the game. The Mountaineers outgained A&M 315-186. Just clearly came into this game with a game plan to dominate possession and not give the ball to A&M, and did exactly what they wanted. The 17-14 App State final, if anything, I think, Sam, undersells how much the better team the Mountaineers were.
Yeah, I think the wildest part to me is that A&M, whose head coach Jimbo Fisher, who pretty much his entire career as a head coach has been his own play caller. If he's had coordinators, it has been more just helping him create game plans, that kind of stuff. But he has been the caller on game day for a long, long time. No secret about that. This guy, Dustin, against a Sun Belt defense, this isn't a knock on the Sun Belt, which is a good group of five conference, a group of five conference that, if it's worse than the American, it's not by a whole lot, that just gave up 61 points last week to UNC. That team held the Aggies to 14 points and under 200 total yards. It's just, I know, like, the Aggie jokes sometimes write themselves, but Dustin, they gave this guy, Jimbo Fisher, comically large amounts of money to be their head coach, and just gave him I think they have to pay his salary in full to buy him out, which is like high 8 figures, low 9 figures, for a guy who can't scheme up more than 14 points against Appalachian State. But again, it's a good program, but A&M, with more money than God, and this coach that's making a bajillion dollars a year, who has pretty much a lifetime contract if he wants it, should be beating Appalachian State on their home field, and is just never less funny the more I talk about it.
Speaking of things that are extremely funny and Sun Belt teams upsetting top 10 teams on Saturday morning, Marshall stunning Notre Dame 26-21. And yeah, similarly to App State, the Thundering Herd did not cheap their way into this one. They ran the ball down Notre Dame's throat pretty much all night. Big gains in the running game. They had the big pick 6 in the final 5 minutes to clinch this one, which was maybe my college football play of the week in a week that had just a ton of incredible moments and plays. But Sam, you know, I think if when you start to look at the post, you know, U of H, Cincinnati, UCF, BYU leaving for the big, for, you know, joining the Big 12, what college football is going to look like starting next year, I honestly don't know if there's a question anymore what the number 6 conference is going to be, or at least, you know, maybe better than number 6, but the top group of 5 conference heading forward, Sam, it looks like it's the Sun Belt by a mile.
Oh yeah, I was, to be clear, I was talking about American as presently constructed there. Marshall's going to be an interesting team too in that big picture, just because they're able to get a lot of partial qualifiers, they're able to get a lot of guys that are transfers from other programs. It's never been a more in vogue time to be a program that relies on transfers. What really struck me watching bits of the Notre Dame and Texas A&M games, Dustin, just watching the quarterback play from both those teams, Do Texas A&M and Notre Dame know that they're allowed to recruit really good quarterbacks, Dustin? I mean, I'm not trying to overstate Notre Dame's relevance in 2022, but Notre Dame should not have any problem picking up a four-star national top 100 kind of quarterback every other cycle, and A&M, even more so, probably should be picking up a high four-star, borderline five-star guy any cycle they want it, and just watching those two, just like, really, Haynes King and whoever the Notre Dame quarterback is were the best these two teams can come up with. That's certainly something.
The other game from Saturday morning I did want to mention was UTSA beating Army 41-38 in overtime. Really exciting game. A nice comeback by the Roadrunners, who trailed by two TDs late in this one. And you and I were certainly texting Sam. I think we could admit that at that point we had pretty much given up on them. And just, after taking a heartbreaking loss in week one, then going all the way to West Point to take on an Army team on the road, and you're down two touchdowns late. Just, they looked done and dusted. But great comeback in this one. Really exciting one. Really exciting game. It's an Army throw for like over 300 yards. They're one of their biggest passing game in just like decades. So really, really fun game that hopefully y'all were able to catch at least some of on Saturday morning in the midst of all the other crazy upsets going on, because a really fun one and a really impressive win, I thought, for the Roadrunners.
Yeah, I think nothing else. It proves that's a team that has the offensive goods and also has a lot of veteran guys that can kind of pull out those games where you're really struggling and it's looking difficult to find a way to win. I think it's worth reiterating that much as we enjoyed the win over UTSA, they were very, very close to winning that one. They were very, very close to being a 2-0 team right now.
All right, and then getting into Saturday afternoon, you know the Saturday afternoon game I'm going to lead with, and that is the Cy-Hawk Trophy, Iowa State beating Iowa. Just the Iowa State-Iowa-iest game that has ever existed in this series. These two schools are incapable of just having an actual, just like, clean, well-played game. I guess you kind of knew this wasn't the year after Iowa's 7-3 win over South Dakota State in week one. You know this was just going to be some traditional Iowa-Iowa State stuff. That game. Trying to watch that game at the same time as I was watching the uber frustrating U of H Texas Tech game was almost too much. Iowa State twice just got the ball down to the goal line and then just turned the ball over like at the goal line and just looked like they were going to trail 7-3 the entire game after, Iowa got their first touchdown of the year after getting, put on a short field by the Cyclones. But then late in the game, Iowa's got the ball right on the goal line and they fumbled it right at the goal line. So this game saw three in total just turnovers just absolutely right at the goal line as both teams just refused to want to score any points whatsoever. But at the end of the day, Sam, they're all beautiful wins when you beat your rival. And that 10-7 Iowa State victory has me feeling at least pretty good coming out of this week, even though my main team was a little bit disappointing.
And it's just remarkable to me that Matt Campbell, who I would say, correct me if I'm wrong here, I feel like the most successful Iowa State coach in the modern era, didn't beat Iowa until this past Saturday. So congrats to your clones there.
Yeah, and then some other interesting results from Saturday afternoon in the Cougars' current conference. Saw some interesting AAC results. Memphis beating Navy 37-13. Seth Hennigan threw for 415 yards. Memphis looked noticeably better after getting thumped by Mississippi State last week. I'm not sure how much that means that Memphis is actually a decent team. How much that is Navy being really bad. I do feel pretty comfortable about the Navy being pretty bad half of that equation. And man, Sam, if I'm a midshipman fan right now, that offense looks pretty rough. I think I am starting to look around for alternate coaching options heading into next year.
Yeah, it really just seems like it's stagnated there. They're just really struggling to do things offensively for the third year in a row now. And I don't think we ever thought there'd be a real sustained period of time where Navy really struggled to get that offense that, we're like, every team's going to have only a week to prepare for it. And that's going to be a really tough matchup to kind of gear shift into. And it's just now for the third year in a row, they just have not been the kind of offense that's really given anyone any kind of problems. And yeah, I think Memphis is who I thought they were. They're a 6-8 win team, but man, if you're 24 points worse at home than Memphis, who's probably fifth or sixth best team in this league, probably that's their ceiling, you're in a real world of hurt. Do Navy and Temple play? Dustin, hold on. I'm going to vamp. You know where I'm probably going with this.
Yeah, no, that is the ultimate toilet bowl game of toilet bowl games if it does happen. But,
They are playing on the 29th at 2:30 p.m. Central Time, a game that I'm sure, God, no one who's listening to this is going to be willing to watch. But I'm going to go so far as to say, Dustin, that is going to be a game played for each respective team's only conference win this year.
Yeah, I think one team is getting one conference win out of that game, and probably neither of them is getting any conference wins out of the rest of them. I don't know. We'll see. USF might have something to play into that factor before it's all said and done, but we shall see. Some more pleasant AAC results from a Saturday afternoon. East Carolina beating Old Dominion 39-21. Basically exactly what you wanted to see from ECU, beating an ODU team that just beat Virginia Tech in week one. The Pirates got the comfortable victory at home. Real nice. I thought balanced offense between Holton Ahlers and Keaton Mitchell both having really strong games for the Pirates offensively. In addition to holding ODU to 21, the Pirates jumped out to a lead early and basically led the whole way before really putting it into another gear in the fourth quarter and putting this one comfortably away. But yeah, I think all in all, really nice. After getting the almost win versus NC State in week one, I think ECU not letting that loss rattle them and proving that they can be a pretty solid team this year.
Yeah, I figured ECU would win this one. I didn't think it would be a totally stress-free kind of win. And you said it. ECU controlled this one pretty much from the jump. That 39-21 final. ODU didn't get that last touchdown until our final possession, which I think gives you an idea of how much the Pirates really controlled this game.
Yeah, I'm looking just randomly. I'm happy to be looking at the ECU conference schedule after they face Campbell next week. Navy at home, at USF, at Tulane, home versus Memphis, and then home versus UCF was looked a little iffy. I don't know, man. I wouldn't be too surprised if they're maybe 4-1 heading into the U of H or the Cincinnati U of H duo of games that they got late. I think that's going to be a team to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I don't think they've given you any reason to doubt them. Yep.
Yeah, speaking of teams to keep an eye on, we'll just briefly mention, we'll talk about more about this game in our Wednesday episode, but man, how about Kansas? The 55-42 overtime victory over West Virginia, kind of had that one circled as even if U of H wasn't playing Kansas next week, would have been an interesting game to keep an eye on as the Jayhawks are suddenly playing with some momentum and confidence that we haven't seen around that program in quite some time. So I guess we'll talk about the Kansas half of this game more on Wednesday, Sam, but I guess from the West Virginia half, you know, Neil Brown, as we get to here in a little bit, not going to be the first coach to lose his job this college football season, but sure doesn't at this point look like he's going to be keeping it heading into next year. I think losing to Kansas at home is probably not the way you keep your job if you're Neil Brown.
Yeah, I've heard he has a pretty hefty buyout. We're going to see how much money the West Virginia booster corps is willing to push out there to not have another year of Neil Brown football. I think acknowledging that Kansas is better than Kansas has been in over a decade, this is a more competent team than we've seen since Mark Mangino was on the sideline there 13 years ago. That still doesn't feel good if you're a West Virginia fan. I'm sure no West Virginia fan is just like, yeah, we surrendered 40-plus points and lost to Kansas, but it's a more competent Kansas than previous years. I think no fan base is anxiety higher right now than the Mountaineers.
All right, and then getting into Saturday evening and night at Oklahoma State beating Arizona State 34-17. So, you know, ultimately it's a 17-point win. It's definitely a win that the Cowboys needed at home. You know, pretty close for a while there. It was a 3-point game early in the fourth quarter before Oak State got a couple of touchdowns to close this one out. So, you know, I guess good to see that a program that looks like it's going to be one of the headliners in the new Big 12 avoided the loss here at home, but you know, maybe a little bit concerning, Sam, that this one was as close as it was. I don't know. What were your thoughts on Oklahoma State after this one?
I mean, I think the takeaway for an Oklahoma State fan is at least you didn't have a second clunker of a defensive performance in a row. You got a good four-quarter effort from that defense. I think you're shifting your worries to the offensive side of the ball, which I don't think looked super inspiring against an Arizona State team, who I don't think is going to be anything more than just a maybe on the right side of bowl eligibility Pac-12 team. Not going to be certainly the strongest opponent they see this year, but at least you saw some good things from the defense. It's kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde week one and week two. You know, you scored a bazillion points in week one against CMU, but your defense nearly let CMU back in the game despite having a comically large lead. You know, week two, your defense looks pretty good throughout, but your offense really needs until the fourth quarter to put away not a great opponent. I don't know, but I think if you're a Oklahoma State fan, you're still happy to be 2-0 at this point. Obviously, know your team has some stuff to work through, but still think they're going to be among the teams in contention with the Big 12 when it's all said and done, because as I think we're going to get to, I think the defending Big 12 champion showed some flaws of their own this weekend.
All right, we will get to that one. You know what, let's just jump into that one. I can go out of order my notes here. We did have BYU beating Baylor 26-20 in overtime. And this was a game that, you know, BYU got word late that their two top wide receivers weren't going to be available in this one. And you know, you saw, you know, Baylor or BYU rather, or both of these teams, I guess, go into overtime and even into double overtime at 20. So certainly you saw the offense is not... you know, having great games, and maybe that was somewhat reflective of BYU losing those receivers. But man, Baylor just really, you know, showed a lot of offensive flaws and struggles for, you know, what is the defending Big 12 champions heading into the season. And I thought, you know, really nice result for BYU. It is at home, but even missing a couple of those guys, really impressed with them getting that win there. And I think a strong result for them, for a program that maybe we haven't talked about as much as, you know, in terms of programs heading into the Big 12 because they're not currently in our conference. But I think, you know, looking like one of the readier of the four programs to head into that conference, Sam.
Not a super original thought on my part. What kind of surprised me at some of the critical points this one, Dustin, was it just didn't seem like Baylor trusted their quarterback, Blake Shapeman. It really just seemed like they were doing everything possible not to have the game hinge on Blake Shapeman's arm. And that's kind of a weird thing to do when Blake Shapeman is the guy who supplanted your starter last year, Gary Bohannon, who's now the starting quarterback at USF. I thought it was weird. I thought if you were just going to do what you did with Shapeman in this game and what they did as an offensive game plan, why didn't you just stick with the guy who clearly had respect in your locker room, who was the starter for all of last season? Just, again, against an opponent who was down two receivers, I don't think it was a shameful loss or anything like that. I think it just was a loss that kind of showed that Baylor still has some stuff to work on offensively, that they're still not all the way there to what maybe their second-year OC, Jeff Grimes, wants to do with his wide zone scheme.
All right, and then I did allude to it a little bit ago, but I have to talk about Georgia Southern beating Nebraska 45-42, costing Nebraska coach Scott Frost his job. He was fired summarily after this one, just three games into the 2022 season. But yeah, coming off of the rough year that they had, it was already kind of iffy to give him another season. And then when you open losing to Northwestern, the one team that you did beat in conference play, and then losing to Georgia Southern. And if you're thinking, oh, well, Georgia Southern, you know, that's usually a pretty tough team. Like, they won 10 games not that long ago. Yeah, they're coming off of a 3-9 season. This is not your, you know, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, Georgia Southern that had made the very quick jump from you know, FCS up to FBS and became competitive right away. They're coming off of a pretty rough year, so surrendering 45 points. I think someone said it was about the first time like ever that Nebraska had scored that many points at home and lost. So just you know, maybe it was a little bit got a little bit less publicity than the top 10 teams losing, but Nebraska losing to Georgia Southern and getting, frankly. Yeah, and I know there's some crazy stat that you tweeted, Sam, about what if they had waited like 3 more weeks, his buyout would have gone down by $7.5 million. But gosh, that program is just so ready to wash their hands of someone that was, of course, a favored son, a beloved son when he came to Nebraska as a head coach.
They gave up 45, Dustin, to a team transitioning out of the triple option.
First
FBS game with a completely new offense. Actually, a former Cougar grad, I believe, Jeremy Singleton, had a number of receptions for GSU in this one. And you know what? Do you know the kind of weird, not funny, because it's someone losing his job. I mean, someone losing his job with a $15 million parachute, so it's not a tragedy. But do you know what kind of the funny through line of Georgia Southern and Clay Helton beating Scott Frost is, Dustin?
I do not.
Clay Helton was the first coach who was fired last year at USC. So the guy who coached, the guy who was the first one fired of last year's coaching cycle beat Scott Frost here and thus makes Scott Frost the first guy for this year's coaching carousel.
That is pretty wild. That is some circle of life stuff right there.
Son of U of H coach Kim Helton. So we're tying it to U of H somehow still.
There you go. Somehow this is a U of H podcast after all. We'll try to make it about the Cougars. And then the last game, the only other game that I had on my notes here was late night game, Oregon State beating Fresno State on the last play. Really, I thought ballsy play calling with just a couple seconds left, down three, choosing to go for the touchdown, which they got for the win there as time expired. And man, I got to be impressed with Oregon State. It, you know, talks about you know, a team that's a kind of a traditional punching bag. The Pac-12's Kansas, as it were, also kind of having their come up at the same time that the Jayhawks are finally becoming a respectable team. Oregon State, again, it's, you know, they didn't beat any quote-unquote P5 teams, but after a thorough beating of Boise State in week one and then beating Fresno State, one of the G5 darlings this year, and a team that's proven itself very capable against power conference opposition, getting the narrow win in week two, I think you got to put some respect on the Beavers.
I think I'm going to kind of adopt Oregon State as my late night team, Dustin, and try to find them whenever they're on. I'm going to save this for our next episode because it's a week three game, but I am livid. Oregon State and USC, yes, who themselves have looked pretty entertaining through week three or through 2 weeks under Lincoln Riley. You know what network that game is on, Dustin?
Pac-12 freaking network.
Which I, despite living a 3-hour drive from the Pacific Ocean, the Pac and Pac-12, cannot get in any form or fashion where I live, and certainly not you where you live, or most of our listeners probably in the general area of Texas can get, which is a shame because I think that will be one of the most entertaining games of the week three slate. And I would co-sign everything you said of Oregon State being a fun team, and I think one of the better coaching jobs out there under OSU alumnus Jonathan Smith.
All right, well, I hope you have at least one other game, Sam, because I don't want to end the podcast that mad because you brought that up and I wasn't going to mention it, but that makes me just absolutely furious. But were there any other week two games that we didn't mention that we should have mentioned, Sam?
Couple quick shout-outs. Wazoo beating Wisconsin 17-14 at Camp Randall. Given that Wazoo wasn't a team expected to be one of the best in the pack this year, to go into Camp Randall under any situation and beat the Wisconsin Badgers, I think, notable achievement. Also want to shout-out Mark Stoops, who passed Bear Bryant for most ever wins in Kentucky football history. Like, I don't want to spend too much time putting shine on an SEC program in this podcast. There are plenty of other people who will very willingly do that job out there. But the fact that this guy, Dustin, has turned Kentucky into a team that, like, their floor now is winning 8 or 9 games a year. That's insane. Like, it used to be a big deal when Kentucky was bowl eligible. And now they're like an 8 to 10 win team, which I think, again, don't want to overtalk the SEC. Plenty of people will do that, but I think one of the best coaching jobs the last decade or so is what Mark Stoops has done for Kentucky football. And that they beat Florida in the swamp, and it was like, oh yeah, no, Kentucky will do that now. They're a good enough program to beat Florida by 10 in the swamp, I think, is just such a testament to what Mark Stoops has done there. So that's it. That's I'm going to, instead of making you mad about Oregon State, USC being in the Pac-12 network, I'm going to make you mad by ending our podcast talking about an SEC conference game.
No, that doesn't make me mad because that allows me, it gives me the chance to make the point that just, that was what was so funny and so weird about Coach Calipari making that, like, basketball school comment.
Yeah.
Like, dude, have you not been paying attention? Like, you have a good football program at your school. Why, like, I can't
and
even
you just
be
lost
like,
to St. Peter's.
It's not even like, well, Coach Cal is, you know, being a dick, but he's right. It's like, no, he's just completely being inaccurate about the state of Kentucky football.
He's vastly underestimating his own positive capital among that fan base. Would very much agree with you there.
For real. All right. Well, sure. I'm. You know what? I'm weirdly fine with bumping up Kentucky football being the end of this podcast. So we'll go ahead and call it there. On our way out, as
trashing
always,
John Calipari, as we love to do.
Yes, we ended the podcast trashing John Calipari. That is truly bringing it full circle on a U of H podcast. So on that note, huge Scott Holman podcast shout out. Huge shout out for myself. Huge thank you from Sam as well to our Patreon supporters. Appreciate you guys putting some money behind the work that Sam and I do, trying to bring you entertaining Cougar content, not just once a week, but multiple times a week during the football season. If you are interested in doing that, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support. Find that link to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon. Send us a tip one time on PayPal, or buy some merchandise with our street sign logo on it. We also love hearing from you, the listener. You can email us shpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at @shpodcast. If you made it all the way to the end of this episode, you are an absolute rock star. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap.